This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, from superchargers and brakes to exhaust kits and beyond, eBay Motors levels your baby up to its peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Peter Rosenberg!
Shout out, Shaq Edwards.
The majesty.
Oh my goodness.
It's professional wrestling.
Championship.
Stay mage and enjoy yourself.
It's still rooted.
Delicious chicken.
It was repug.
It's professional wrestling.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world's number one sports and recreation podcast, Cheap Heat, is back. That's right, back. Something going on this Friday? A lot going on, frankly. Most notably, I'm super stoked about our guest today on the show. Shoemaker called me this week and said, hey, we're going to be the ones announcing the newest inductees to the WWE Hall of Fame, the U.S. Express. Do you want to talk to Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda? And I said, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say yes. So I'll tell you right now, if you're not a nerd, and like you don't really love this ish through and through, today might not be for you. But if you want to hear stories about, you know, Chief J Strongbow and working with Nikolai Volkoff and Iron Sheik at WrestleMania 1 and Blackjack Mulligan, if you really want to do it all in the ways of 80s wrestling, we're going to do it today with Mike Rotunda, a.k.a. IRS, and Barry Windham. Windham already in the WWE Hall of Fame with the Four Horsemen, of course, but this is different. This is different. And I treated this interview, of course, not just about the U.S. Express because that run was short, but really just about their whole career and relationship, which if you don't know about it, you'll learn right off top. And it's pretty awesome, man. It's a pretty awesome story. Hope you'll check it out. I think you'll dig it. Now, I don't know. I don't want people to say crazy things about me because you guys know, if nothing else, I am a company man. I'm WWE through and through. I bleed whatever color that would be. You know what I'm saying? I bleed Stamford, Connecticut. But before we get to a little bit of mailbag and the interview with the U.S. Express, I do have to say I tuned into Dynamite on Wednesday, of course, to follow up what was a really big pay-per-view with the send-off of Sting and the Will Ospreay debut. And then what did we get on Dynamite? But an incredible Will Ospreay match. Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher. No huge shock. Ospreay gets the win. And then after he gets the win, which was money, and just a really, really solid match, We then get, the second the match ends, Bryan Danielson's music. Ospreay stares him down. We get the stare down between Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson, and we're out. Well, bleeping done. Yeah, people are going to want that. You know why? Because now you're offering people an alternative product. You're not offering a bad version of WWE and just people who are no longer with WWE, which I'm not saying they've done that the whole time. They haven't. But in their bad spots, in their bad moments, that's what it's felt like. In the good moments, AEW is offering you a different product that is just not what you tune in to WWE to get. And ending the show with Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay, yeah, into that. However, that wasn't it. The EVPs had a big announcement in the middle of the ring. And I got to tell you guys know I'm not a fan of the EVPs. The Bucks are not my style. So them as like complete shitbag heels, I'm pretty into it. They announced that they were suspending Hangman Page. Then they announced that Kenny Omega was suspended from the Elite. So the indefinite suspension for Hangman for hitting an official. And then they say Kenny Omega hasn't made any of his dates. So they say, Ken, you're fired, actually. I apologize. I got that wrong. And then they say they have another huge announcement. Eddie Kingston comes out. Eddie Kingston fights back, you know, kind of, you know, goes off. Basically is like, I know you're going to suspend me, and just starts trying to beat them down. And then, boom, music, the Rainmaker. Okada appears in AEW. Okada comes down. You think maybe he's going to have Eddie Kingston's back? Not so much. Takes out Eddie Kingston, joins the Elite. Okada is with the Elite, and they announced that he will debut with the Elite on Collision on Saturday. So it was just, listen, guys, I'm not going to ever sit here and lie, okay? Company man or not. It was a good week for AEW. Really, really was. And it's a good week for pro wrestling. Give me more diversity, please. Inject it into my veins. Give me more options. We are heading into the biggest WrestleMania season, maybe of all time. The Rock is back. You are getting high-level entertainment. Cody Rhodes at the top of his game. Seth Rollins is in a great place. Rhea Ripley is a gigantic new star. You know, John Cena almost intimated this week, maybe we could see him. I don't know. I'm sort of thinking we're not going to get him. No matter how you cut it, it is a great time for pro wrestling. And I'm just glad. I just thought AEW was on the verge of completely falling apart. That is how it felt to me when MJF was gone and a lot felt rudderless. Then they have a big pay-per-view. Ospreay, Okada, and it's expected next week, Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks. So it's a very cool time for pro wrestling. I'm very, very excited. Big business. I want everybody out here making that guap, that cheese, that cheddar. All right. I may have rambled too long for mailbag. Hold on. How long have I been going here? Let me hit one or two mailbags, and then we'll get to this interview. And I hope you guys will stick around and enjoy the whole thing. Give me all your thoughts, because I really enjoy doing these throwback interviews, and I hope you guys dig them as well. So a little mailbag first. Can I? Should I? Will I?
Will to be, damn it!
No, we know.
I'll be...
Thank you. Take it easy, man.
Yeah, take it easy, man.
Thank you, guys.
Mail.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fuck, for
saying what needed to be said.
I don't want to see it. Another one of these.
Well, thank you.
Nah, well, thank you, man. Let's see. Yeah, guys, February 29th. This is from David. Paul the Butcher Vachon of the Vachon family passed away. 86 years old. David says, coming from Montreal, I saw him wrestle with Mad Dog many, many times in their Grand Prix Wrestling Federation. It was the two of them that ushered Andre the Giant into America. So big, big rest in peace to Paul the Butcher Vachon. Good call. Thank you, man. I'm glad you said that. Okay. Got a lot of mail this week.
Mail.
Let's see if our ticket. Let's also check if our ticket sales went up since Tuesday. I want everybody to know the merch design is complete. That's right. The merch design is complete. And I believe we did go up again a few more. So it's working. Every week we plug this event. I put in my request for talent this week. I don't know what it's going to be, and I'm not going to tell you. But we're going to get big talent in there. We're going to have a shirt that's going to be limited to the amount of people in the building. So the point is, I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm very excited. I'm just trying to decide how many shirts. Like, I don't want to order a shirt. Not everyone who comes to the event is going to buy a shirt, right? Like, I don't need to literally buy. Like, the venue holds 240. I'm not going to get 240 shirts. Like, my guess is I'm going to short the event by some, because not everybody's buying a shirt. I don't expect everybody to be that big a Markola. Oh, wait.
Mail.
Thanks, Tim. All right, last one. Then let's get to this interview. Donald says, hey, what's up, Sweet Pete? I was thinking The Rock did acknowledge Roman Reigns as his tribal chief. That being said, isn't The Rock high up on that family tree with a different title, like a high chief or something? Stay mage. Respect to you guys. I don't know. Maybe he is higher than the tribal chief, and so his acknowledging means nothing. Steve writes about the wisdom of dip.
Mail.
To quote the late lamented Meatloaf, dip took the words right out of my mouth on Tuesday. I had been mentally composing an email about how WWE could salvage something made from Damian Priest's lackluster Money in the Bank briefcase run, and I arrived at the same conclusion as Dip, that he should use it to challenge and defeat Gunther. The IC may not be a top-tier title, but Gunther has elevated it way above the mid-card, so the fit is good for Priest, but it would serve Gunther too. While Gunther gets heel heat, he isn't really a heel. He rarely resorts to underhanded tactics in ring, and if any shenanigans do take place, they're usually committed by his Imperium stablemates. He may be brutal, but at his heart, his character is a warrior driven by honor. If Priest was to challenge an exhausted Gunther after a hard-fought title match, then there would be no dishonor in Gunther's losing. He would not be beaten by the better man, but by insurmountable odds. In fact, if Gunther battled through this kayfabe exhaustion and gave Priest a good run for his money, and we know that the man has the cardio to wrestle for 60 minutes and up, he would be cheered to the rafters, and he would finally be carried out on his shield. When he was finally carried out on his shield. If he didn't have the resting face of a bulldog chewing a wasp, he'd be good for a face run. Yeah, I don't think you need a face run from him, but I do agree there's no loss to that happening. I 100% agree with that. Guys, let's get to it, man. Happy Friday. I hope everyone's having a great Friday. Rock on SmackDown again tonight. Stoked to see that. We are less than a month away from WrestleMania and hanging out with you peckerheads in Philadelphia. RosenbergBeats@gmail.com. Talk to us on the Discord, of course, as well. And now my conversation with the newest inductees, or who will be the newest inductees to the WWE Hall of Fame Class of 2024, the U.S. Express. There's something going on. Friday edition of Cheap Heat, and this is super, super cool. As reported, it is official. The U.S. Express going to the WWE Hall of Fame Class of 2024, and I am lucky enough to be joined by Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda, the U.S. Express. Guys, congratulations.
Thanks, Peter. Thank you, Peter.
Mike, I'll start with you since Barry, you've been in once before. So I'll start with you, Mike. You've had such an incredible career in professional wrestling, specifically in WWE, but even beyond that. Did you expect this honor, and what does it mean to you?
No, it was kind of out of the blue. I wasn't expecting it. It means a lot, you know. I mean, you're getting rewarded for a lifetime of work. So, you know, it's a nice honor to have the respect of, you know, the officials that elect to put you in there, and hopefully of all the guys that I worked with that made me look good.
And Barry, this will be your second time getting to have this experience. You had the Four Horsemen experience, but did you expect to get another phone call at some point to honor the rest of your work?
No, it was a really big surprise. And, you know, this one is special because I get to go in with my best friend, and, you know, that just makes it all that much bigger.
Can you guys, before we jump ahead and talk about some of the wrestling stuff and the moments, you guys, I mean, you're obviously physically together, even as we're having this conversation, your family, your friends, there's so much there. Where did the relationship between you two begin?
You want to go? Well, basically, I was really new in the wrestling business. I started over in Germany. Stayed there 4 months and worked. And then a guy named Johnny Weaver from Crockett Promotions, got me booked. They called me and got me booked in, or maybe it was Dick Byer got me. He called someone and got me booked in Toronto at the Maple Leaf Gardens. So I went up there and I worked a match with Jesse Ventura, which lasted about a minute and a half. And he beat me. And afterwards, Barry and his dad, Blackjack Mulligan, and Barry was Blackjack Mulligan Jr. at the time with the black hair and the mustache. We met at the show. And in Toronto, they used to do like a ham and cheese party with beer and stuff where the guys could go after at a hotel. So Barry and I hooked up and hit it off right away. And I'm pretty sure we probably ended up drinking a couple beers there and then going out on the town a little bit in Toronto. So we just hit it off from the get-go. We were younger guys, and, you know, relatively, I'm about 2 years older than Barry, so we're relatively the same age and hit it off. So we just hit it off there, and then I didn't see him for another year and a half. And finally, Dusty Rhodes called. He was working in Florida.
Yeah, you had been in Germany then, right?
Well, I went to Germany before, and then I went to the Carolinas for a year and a half. And then Dusty called the Crocketts and said, I need a young baby face down here. So the Crocketts told me, you're going to Florida. So I said, okay, you know, that sounded pretty good. And we got there, and Barry was there, and Barry was, you know, well-established. He'd already been working there probably 3 years at the time. And Dusty ended up putting us as a tag team. And that was a good move on his part because we worked about 30-minute matches every night. Yeah. And Dusty would do the main event in the middle of the show and go about 7 minutes. And we would close the show up every night working 30 minutes for the tag team title. So, you know, and it was a great experience. And you know, that really developed our friendship, you know, being
that
down
there. That was just the Florida formula there.
Right.
At that point, I mean, it must be crazy now looking back to think that at that point you never could have dreamed of that one day it would become your family, your whole life, this guy who you met having a couple of beers in Toronto would be the thing that led you to this whole right. world.
Well, yeah. And it just so happened that my wife of 40 years coming up in October came to visit him in Florida.
40 years.
Oh yeah. And we were married 6 months after that. So, you know, that's how everything got started. So
Barry, no second guessing. Did Mike come to you and say, hey, I'm thinking about proposing to your sister, or was it already a done deal?
Yeah, he absolutely did. And he asked me if he should ask my dad. And he asked my old man before he went out with her.
Which was a wise move, since Blackjack was like 6'8", 330 pounds.
Well, I was going
to
say.
Had a mean temper.
Yeah. I got to say, it worked out so beautifully, but of all the father-in-laws to have to approach to ask for a hand in marriage, Blackjack Mulligan, I mean, that's an intimidating one, Mike.
Right, for sure.
But we were all working together, so we were all friends too. So it was good. It was easy.
So, Barry, what about your foray into the wrestling business? Was it always a foregone conclusion for you that you were going to follow in your dad's footsteps?
No, I was out at West Texas State. I was rooming with Kelly Kaniski, and I was on scholarship for football there. And going into my second year, I think they had a referee sick or something. I started refereeing, and on the weekends I would just travel and referee and haul the chairs. And then I'd started hauling the ring and then refereeing every match. And so, I mean, it just kind of took off, and it was during the off season of football. So it kind of just took over and I didn't go back.
And at what point did it become clear? Like, nah, this is for me too. This is going to be my calling as well.
I would say it probably wasn't until, let's see, I left out there and came to Florida. I would say I was in Florida for about 6 months when I realized it really, you know, wanted to do it and that it, you know, it would be good. So I would say the middle of probably early 1980. I match 79, I believe. Yeah.
Did it come physically naturally for you? I mean, there is that quality that exists, and, you know, and of course we'd go on to see it in your families as well. As the generations go on, there is an ease. I've always noticed this sort of ease in style of the multi-generational superstars. Did you have that? Like, did it come to you naturally just from being Black Jack's kid?
Well, I mean, I'm sure at first, and I know I was clunky. One of the first times I worked out with my old man, I picked him up for a slam and I fell on him and dropped my elbow right in his eye socket. He had a huge black eye for a month after that.
Sure, he didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
So I got one in on it.
But yeah, I mean, I was clunky and hard to move around, but I mean, I figured it out after a while. I spent a lot of time listening to Dusty and Eddie Graham and, you know, all the guys I worked with. I listened. I was like a sponge and just tried to learn every match.
I think he's being modest because he's like one of the smoothest guys I've ever seen in the ring. So,
yeah, you do have quite the reputation for that, Barry. Mike, when did the call come from Connecticut for you guys to try this thing with WWE?
Well, we went back up to Charlotte and they were trying to go pretty much, you know, like nationwide, like WWE was doing at the time. And it took off. We weren't making any money. And it just so happened that Blackjack had worked all those years in Charlotte for a guy named George Scott, was the booker there. And WWE hired George Scott. So through Blackjack, we got, you know, Blackjack told us, hey, these guys want you guys to come up there. And we'd had a good run, you know, in Florida for a good year, working 7 days a week, twice each day on the weekend, and putting in time and had our stuff down pretty good, you know. So we got the call from George Scott, and we ended up, I got married, and about a week later started in WWE. So the only way I saw my wife was to bring her on the road, you know, and she wanted to go to California where she was born, or New York, or, you know, the bigger cities. So I'd bring her when we were on those, and she'd come on the road with us for a week. And that was the only time, because we, that year, the first year in 85, we worked 300 days. And that was mostly double shots on the weekends. They'd run two shows each weekend, you know, so we were putting in a lot of road time, and there was no rhyme or reason how stuff was booked either, because everything was selling out. It was hot. You might be in Texas one night and then New York City the next night and then San Diego the next night, then to somewhere in Canada the next, you know, it was just, we'd go to TV every 3 weeks. They would hand you a stack of, with a rubber band around it, your booking sheet and your tickets. And the ticket stack was like this for the next 3 weeks. You just got on those flights every day at 6. And sometimes you drove, you know, but it was mostly flying, early morning flights to get to the next show. Yeah.
Who would you guys say were the, is when you think of the US Express time in WWE, is there one specific tag team that comes to mind as your most regular opponent?
Oh yeah, Sheik and Volkov, which was great because those guys were so over and so hated I mean, it was easy, but it was also very hard because there was a lot of
like herding cats, huge cats.
Barry would be on the apron screaming at Sheik or Volkov throughout the match. the fans were going crazy because they had so much heat. And then once we got established, you know, doing the USA thing, the whole place was chanting USA, you know. So it was very exciting and live, but it was also pretty crazy at the same time.
And we had the same match every night for a year, but it was different every night with them.
Well, could if you had to, if you were physically capable, could you still work that match right now? Could you remember everything you have to do?
Not with them. That's for sure. It hurt then. It would really hurt now. We got there's a story. Can I tell a story? Yeah,
please tell all the stories.
So we dropped the titles to them at WrestleMania.
That's right, WrestleMania 1.
Yeah, and back then they gave us like a week off, which was unheard of before you went back on the road. So the first show we worked back on the road was it was in Georgia. Where do they do the Masters tournament, the golf?
Augusta.
Augusta. So we're in Augusta. So we go there. It's the first match back after we did WrestleMania, like a week or 10 days later. So the finish to the match was Nikolai. I was making a comeback on Sheik and hit him with something. Nikolai's supposed to make three saves. And on the third save, the ref throws the match out, disqualification. So, boom, I hit Sheik with something. Here comes Nikolai, and Barry chases him off. I hit him with something else. Here comes Nikolai. Third one, Nikolai stands there on the apron and watches me pin Sheik. One, two, three. We won the titles.
We're all looking at Nikki.
We're all looking at each other, looking at Nick. We get back. The Chief Jay Strongbow was the agent, producer on the show. And he's going crazy, yelling at the Sheik and Volkov. But back then there was no cell phones, no nothing. So the next day we give them the titles back, their champs again, and we go out
like it never happened.
And it happened again.
Yeah,
it happened the next day. The same thing. And Sheik would come back and he'd be cussing Nikolai out, calling him a dumb Russian, blah, 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 blah. And so 2 days in a row, finally the third day of the loop, they got it right. So that's what we're talking about. It was really easy, but it could be very difficult at the same time.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED highlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Maybelline New York. Get ready to bring the heat with Maybelline's newest lip plumping gloss, Lifter Plump. Fair warning though, it's hot. Like, literally. It's formulated with chili peppers to bring a heated sensation and an instant plumping effect that lasts. Available in 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Hot Honey, and more. Buy Lifter Plump now on Amazon and use the code 10PLUMP to get 10% off for a limited time. Tap the banner to learn more.
Barry, what was WrestleMania like? I mean, obviously we're coming up on 40 and you guys will get to be a big part of the weekend with the Hall of Fame celebration. That's obviously now it's a 2-day event. It's at a football stadium. There's endless other events. It's obviously just become insane. What did WrestleMania 1 feel like? What did it really feel like a huge deal to the boys at the time?
Yeah, it did, because I mean, we made a big deal out of it. It had a different atmosphere, you know, because all the celebrities and everybody there. We prepped for it for about a month, you know, just with Sheik and Volkov, you know, and just with our matches. But I mean, other than that, as soon as our match was over, Mike and I were at the airport and on our way home because we hadn't been home in a month at that time.
Right. So. We actually went looking. I was going to buy my wife
a dog, yeah.
A bulldog. And we went to this place in New York and looked at them. And for whatever reason, I don't remember, it was a long time ago, we didn't get one. So when I got home, through the Briscoe brothers, Jack Briscoe's wife was partners with a guy that they bred really nice Rottweilers. And I got my wife a Rottweiler puppy, and her name was Mania.
So, no way.
And then yeah. We've had like 4, 5, or 6 Rottweilers over the years, but that Mania was our first.
That's amazing. Obviously, when you guys, you've both been at Manias before in the modern era and been around and been backstage, how different is the vibe? I mean, you talked about the celebrities being there. You know, I host the kickoff shows for premium live events. And I, you know, Mania weeks come around. It's very different than if we're doing some random PLE in St. Louis, there's not really anyone around. You get to WrestleMania, catering's filled with celebrities and their entourages walking around. I mean, I just have to imagine it's such a far cry from what you guys experienced. How different was the backstage energy in the mid 80s versus today?
Well, you know, when you're involved in wrestling in the show, your mind is on that as opposed to the surroundings.
Everything going on,
you know, man. And if you sit back and watch it now, yeah, I mean, it's grown into unbelievable. Just what goes on and all the stuff. And I produced there for 13 years, so You even saw that side of it when I was producing. And it's a stressful show, you know, because it's a high energy and you want to perform well, whether you're producing or you're wrestling or what, you know. And I guess being as young as we were, I think I was maybe 26 and Barry 24, we were just kind of zoned in and loose and we just kind of flew up there. We flew up there the same morning to WrestleMania, which we were supposed to be there already, but we hadn't been home in forever. So we jumped on a flight to New York. We did the show and we jumped on a flight and shot back to Florida. So, I mean, it was a whirlwind day, but it was pretty cool. I mean, it was like, and nobody knew what to expect, I think, you know, and then once the pay-per-view numbers came in, I mean, it was a huge success, you know, and now you see what it's built in, you know, 40 years later, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's so many moving parts to it that, you know, what we see is just a small bit, but the whole entire production is just huge. Unreal. And you know, to be able to grasp everything that goes on, I'm sure there can't be one person that runs all of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff.
No, it's a huge undertaking, that's for sure. 2 days of it, so.
Exactly. It's double the crazy. Speaking of backstage, were you guys backstage the day David Schultz slapped John Stossel?
I'm sure we were, but you know, I don't remember all went on. Was that at WrestleMania?
No, yeah. It was at the Garden. It was at the Garden. I don't think it wasn't at Mania, but it was backstage at a Garden show.
I don't recall if we were there or not, because you know, there was probably three, sometimes four towns running a night. So you didn't know, you know, looking back, I'm not sure if we were there or not.
Do you remember the conversation about it? Yeah, I was going to say, do you remember the conversation around it after?
We were there.
We were just in our dressing room down the hall, and it was just a little short interview, and it happened so quick, and it was over before, you know, anything. And then it was just word of mouth through the dressing room.
You know, and back then, the business was protected, you know, a lot more now.
Well, I always sort of feel bad for, listen, I didn't know the man, but I always kind of feel bad for Dr. D, because I kind of felt like he was doing what he thought and was the right thing to do in that moment. And then it, in the end, it kind of ruined him long term. But I kind of felt like it wasn't that kind of the right thing to do as far as you guys were sort of trained at that point.
Yeah, that's at the time for sure. You know, you protected the
business.
Back before we got to New York and WWE, a lot of promoters, if heels and baby faces rode up into the town, you'd be fired for that because there was, you know, kayfabe in the business.
That's right. That is the real meaning of kayfabe. It's just protecting the business. Yeah. That's what kayfabe means overall.
You know, it changed over the years, you know, and my understanding was because of the commissions, they're treating it like a boxing match, and here goes 25% of the gate out the door to them, and they really don't do anything for you, you know. So, right. You know, WWE made the stance that it's an entertainment business, and we know who's going to be win on, in which we didn't always know because you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly right. Barry, when you went back to WWE later and the new Blackjack things happened, what was that experience like? And what was your thought of a young Justin Hawk back then? Your early impressions of JBL?
Well, Vince put us together so I could train Bradshaw, you know, just be around me, and I guess just more or less learn from watching me work or whatever. But he's really a great guy, and I guess he's got a bad rap for being a bully, but you know, he's really got a good heart, and he's a great guy.
I love the guy. I love him. He's the first kind of when I got to the company, he was always on all the shows with me and would both bust my balls and smarten me up. That's kind of what I've always thought. He's nothing but a gentleman in my time. Yeah. And his work style, though, you know, always to me reminded me of that old school hard-nosed work style from your guys' era.
Right. Yeah.
And I wonder how much of that he gained during that time working with you.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that he did. I remember when I worked with him the first night, I think it was in Wheeling, West Virginia. Vince sent us out there against each other in a pre-match, like a dark match. And we ended up going 30 minutes, which we were supposed to go 5 or 6 minutes. And Vince kept telling the ref, let him go longer. So I ran through all my repertoire with John in 30 minutes. But it was like, you know, I could see it was there, but he was snug and everything was, you know, he was a little more than crisp. He was really there. And I think that's just what Vince wanted me to do, just kind of polish him, maybe show him how to work.
Yeah, he's a big old boy.
Yeah. You
know, and strong. So,
yeah, in Japan, they'd say, please tag in a little Blackjack to me and say that to him.
Mike, for you, present company excluded, what was your favorite time in the business and who were your favorites to work with?
I think doing IRS was my most successful run. And I was ready. I started at the varsity club. That was the first time I worked heel, which I enjoyed the varsity club. We had a lot of fun. Steiner and I and Dr. Death and Spivey was in there for a short time, which Kevin Sullivan was our manager in the varsity club, which made no sense, but it was like we had the devil coach, you know. But it was like it was a different kind of gimmick because nobody usually, if you were an amateur, everybody tried to be the All-American guy, and we were just the All-American assholes, you know, thought we were better than everybody. So I had a lot of fun with that. But being IRS, one of my favorite guys to work with of all time was Big Boss Man. He was, I just enjoyed, we had so much fun, and we were in the ring in St. Louis on an afternoon show. We had a double shot, and they had the ice down because we were working where they did the hockey games. So there was condensation on the mats leading up to the ring. So Big Boss Man, Earl Hebner, the referee, and I are in the ring. I did my little promo. So we're waiting, and Boss Man's music hits, and here comes Boss Man. And it's about a, I don't know, probably a 25, 30-yard run. And he's hauling ass, boom, and he hits those mats with the condensation. And all of a sudden, we're watching him come at this way, and he hits like a surfer. He's going, and he's sliding across the mats and bending his legs, trying to keep his balance. And his face goes, boom, right into the ring apron. And he rolls underneath, and it wasn't funny, but it was so funny. Earl and I are like almost pissing our pants trying not to laugh. And we look down, and Boss Man goes, "Oh, knocked the fucking shit out of myself." And Earl Hebner and I are now, we can't hold it back. We're laughing so hard, and you know, the people, they saw what happened too. So just stuff like that happened. That he was one of my favorite guys to work with. Brad Armstrong, I'll tell you, was a really smooth guy to work with too. He was a true baby face. He could make anybody cry, you know. So when I first turned heel, I got to work with him a bunch, and that I enjoyed working with him. He was a great worker.
Was the IRS gear annoying to work in?
No, I'll tell you what, it was really comfortable in the winter. Because we did a lot of buildings that it was hot, but I always sweat. You just got used to it. It was something you got used to. And I would go on the road for 2 weeks, and I had a bunch of these shirts, and when we'd get them pressed, and I'd just one at a time, and then bring them back, take them to the laundry mat, but not the cleaners the next time for the next go around. So yeah, you just got used to it.
I want to ask you briefly about the theme song. Obviously, it's a big deal. You guys went Born in the USA, which was the smash at the time, albeit an ironic patriotic song. But for your guys' case, it was just a straight ahead patriotic song.
Right.
Then you end up getting the Derringer Real American song, which now probably is the most iconic entrance song in the history of the business. Did you guys think right away, like, oh shit, this Real American, could you tell that it was a thing?
Well, yeah, we did, but we were too stupid to hang on to it. We ended up leaving. So, and I'm sure, you know, Hogan using it made it even more iconic. So, but yeah, it was a cool song.
Could you have had the option? You didn't have the option to take it though, did you?
No, actually, it was made. If you listen to the album, it was dedicated to two real Americans, which were Barry and I. But like I said, we ended up leaving WWE, being young and dumb, and you know, it was given to Hogan, and he, like I said, made it even more iconic because he, you know, he was over as good as anybody of all time there. So
that's where all the music copywritings were coming in too. That's why we couldn't use Born in the USA anymore.
And really, realistically, that's what people identified us to, because we did use it for quite a while.
Right.
And when that music hit, you know, Born in the USA, I mean, everybody got it. So more to me, like, sticks with me more than Real American because of that. That's when our music hit, people knew here we come, you know. Half the time we'd look up in the ring and there'd be 20 people in the ring with Sheik and Volkov trying to fight them. We'd have to run to the ring and start throwing bodies out so we could have our match. So
you mentioned Chief J Strongbow, and he gets mentioned a lot in so many of these stories because he was an agent for all those years in the glory days. How important was he for you guys as a backstage figure, and how important was, I mean, then of course, Mike, you did it on the other end as well, doing that yourself. How important were the road agents in those days?
Yeah, they were. We had Blackjack Lanza, Rene Goulet,
George the Animal Steele later on.
Tony Gurria. Arnie Skolan.
Yeah, Arnie Skolan was around a lot because he handled like the money and stuff. I mean, realistically, they didn't tell you how to work as much as the producers do now.
Yeah.
You know, it was a different job back then because you didn't do live TVs. When you're doing live TVs, you're talking to a production truck and they didn't do any of that stuff. You know, like Gorilla Monsoon would tell you, go to the ring. And that was, you'd go out and nobody mapped out your matches for you and did stuff like that. So it was a little different job. They were just there to oversee and make sure, you know, who got there and everything went smoothly, which is still the job today, but you're much more entailed in the matches and stuff, especially at televisions, because you got to know to tell the director, to keep the camera guys, here comes the next shot, that kind of thing. More of a live television atmosphere. And they didn't do any of that back then. You know, I don't even think they even sat in Gorilla while their match was going on, you know, because it wasn't as in tune to the whole system of live TV back then. So it's changed a lot.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it from that perspective, that at that point, you know, it was a lot of grown men going out there to wrestle and the agents there to kind of just make sure everything runs smooth. Whereas these days, it's a lot more, you have a lot of kids who are only in the business a few years who really need to have someone kind of help map it out. What was your last year as a producer in WWE?
I think 2019 when COVID hit, they furloughed a bunch of people and I was one of them. Then I came back for a short time after that. And then they let quite a few producers go, like myself and Arn Anderson and Dean Malenko and guys that had been there, which was fine by me because I was about ready to pull the plug myself. I'd had my hip operated on and replaced. So I was out for a couple months. And I told my wife, this is after a good almost 13 years of doing it. And I said, after being home for a couple of months, I go, I don't know if I can go back to work. So it just kind of worked itself out like that. So it was okay with me. But yeah, I think it was 2019.
How much involvement when Bray came up to the big leagues, how much involvement did you have professionally? And how much personally would you just pull him aside and sort of give him insight?
Well, yes and no. I didn't have a few like Bray's matches I produced, but not a ton of them, which was okay with me because it's your kid, you know, and you're going to look at things differently. But I did produce some matches. I did a lot of house shows with both my sons on there, with Bo Taylor and Wyndham on there, Bray, you know, as the head agent or one of the two agents that was on the shows. I did a lot of house shows, live events, but not so much television wise, but I got to see a good portion, you know, of them coming up and how well they did. So
I felt like there was a lot more gas in the Bo Leave tank. I was a big Bo Leaver. I just thought I thought it was one of the more unique sort of heel gimmicks I'd seen in a while. This sort of like almost ostentatiously positive thing. Like it was very unique. And both your boys, just like I said earlier about asking Barry, they seemed to have a smoothness to them in the way that they worked. Did it appear that way to you too? Were they always messing around as kids and trying to roll around?
Yeah, they had the living room and my daughter would film the matches and we had some titles that we had, you know, at home and they'd get dressed up and put on a show and film it, you know? So they were around the business and at the time I didn't let them watch supposedly, but I think they still were a lot of the stuff that WWE was doing because it was so risque with the girls and the, you know, in just the stuff they were doing. And they were pretty young at the time, but I'm sure they saw a good portion of it when I wasn't watching. So, but yeah, they were always, you know, I mean, and that's a natural thing. Your uncle, your dad, your grandfather, your friends that come over, and they're all wrestlers and stuff, you know, and you're just around the business. So I'm sure you get glimpses. I remember I was working for WCW and they used to film TVs in Disney and at Universal, you know, down in Orlando. So I took the kids there sometimes, Wyndham and Taylor, and they were in the ring with the Uso brothers, you know, in the daytime, jumping off the ropes and having a practice match. So when your dad's in it, you kind of grow up around it and you're exposed to it. So, and I do, I think both ways, like with Bray Wyatt was one of the Wyatt family was one of my favorite gimmicks of all time. And both boys, I think they could have got a lot more mileage out of the Bray Wyatt, the Wyatts. And then also with Bo was the youngest NXT champion they've ever had, you know, mm-hmm. and he was probably 18, 19 years old. He caught the business quickly.
Well, the rumors still pop up about Bo is like a constantly in the rumor mill about what will happen next with Bo. It doesn't seem like that story's been written yet.
Right. Well, hopefully it'll get written shortly. So,
and Barry, for you as their uncle from afar, watching from a distance, how impressed were you with what Bray and Bo were able to do in WWE?
Well, I mean, they're both so talented, and it's just, you know, now Taylor, Bo is, you know, is going to get a chance, and we'll see what he can do.
Yeah, I was always a big fan. And you know, I'd be remiss to not tell you, you know, I was lucky enough. I don't know Bo well. I was lucky enough to spend, some nice moments with Bray, and he was, just an absolute gentleman. I just, a real treat of a human to get to be around. So a credit to you both. Guys, congratulations. I'm excited to shake your hand in person and congratulate you in Philadelphia, but this has been a treat for me and my audience, and well-deserved congrats on the Hall of Fame.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening. At this time, I would like to introduce, in the corner to my left,
the Majesty,
sweet, sweet Peter Rosenberg.
And then I went to makeup and like sat in front of the mirror a little bit and got myself together.
Also, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I would like to introduce...
Shout out to that guy, Greg.
Bret Hart is the greatest professional wrestler in the history of the art form.
Midge.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.